talk a lot about preparing well for the second half of life. But my guest today thinks we should be more precise. Because in his view, once we turn 60, we're entering our fourth quarter. And just like the fourth quarter in a basketball game, the game is indeed on the line. I'm Joe Casey, and this is the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. And my guest today is Alan Hunt. He is the fourth quarter guy who helps people discover how to become the best version of themselves in the fourth quarter of life. A four-time number one Amazon best-selling author, Alan collaborated with Matthew Kelly to write No Regrets, a fable about living your fourth quarter intentionally. In that fable, they share the groundbreaking secrets of the fourth quarter, the five keys to living and dying with no regrets. Those five keys then led them to create The Fourth Quarter of Your Life, Embracing What Matters Most, a workbook to help people do just that, discover and plan how to intentionally live their fourth quarters with confidence, boldness, and passion. Alan earned a PhD from Yale University. He enjoys hiking, literature, spirituality, history, and good food. He and his wife, Anita, live in Georgia and have two daughters, two sons-in-law, and seven grandchildren. 5 years ago, my wife and I had the pleasure of attending a workshop that Alan led at a church outside of Philadelphia through the organization Dynamic Catholic, and it was a meaningful experience, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to visit with Alan again today. Alan, thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you, Joe. Thank you for inviting me.
So what's different and perhaps special about the fourth quarter of life?
Well, you know, I think we've been sort of conditioned over the last 30 or 40 years to think about life as being in two halves. But as I've really kind of, I've got a long time in full-time ministry, as you know, and as I've really kind of walked alongside people in life, I really came to realize the average American's life expectancy is 80 years, slightly less actually, but let's call it 80 to be generous. And so when you turn 60, you really are three-fourths of the way through. And you're in that fourth quarter. And as I've been kind of accompanied folks on that journey, I've realized your perspective really changes at that point in different kinds of ways. Your values may not, but your perspective and your point of view does. And certain things become more important. Other things begin to kind of recede into the background. And like my co-author, Matthew Kelly, and I say, death is the one unavoidable truth. And in the fourth quarter, you begin to realize that at some level. And then once you actually really realize that and accept it, then you can truly begin to live. It's almost liberating once you realize, hey, this thing is going to, there is a termination date. And so that fourth quarter takes on an urgency and a time is of the essence. And how do I maximize this and what really matters?
So just like sports, it's crunch time.
It is. Yeah, exactly. It's go time, man. When we were writing the book, Matthew looked at me and he goes, Alan, you look like you're in the hurry up 2 minute offense. You better go ahead and get this book written.
No huddle whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
So as you've looked at this, what do successful fourth quarters have in common?
Yeah, we've done a lot of research, Joe, over really the last decade, including reading a lot of other people's research, reading a lot of the health on and science on aging, doing over 1,000 interviews and examining this from different kinds of perspectives. And I guess I would say successful fourth quarters or thriving fourth quarters, I guess I would say two things. One is there's a high level of intentionality. There's a high level of intentionality. You're not just sort of coasting through or just kind of going by the seat of the pants, but get kind of clear on what you want to do, who you want to be, what you want to become. And then in our book, No Regrets, that the fable, we share what we call the five keys to a successful or a thriving fourth quarter. And just very quickly, those, number one is to say yes to God. Number two is to embrace or focus on a fourth quarter virtue. Number three is give it away. Number four is to forgive often. And number five is to remain open to life. And that as we kind of distilled all that we got from the talking with hospice nurses and being with people in their fourth quarters and doing these interviews, and reading that, we kind of distilled it down to sort of those five key aspects of do those five things well, and you'll have a successful fourth quarter.
So what are some unforced errors that really are ones we should try to avoid in this fourth quarter?
That's a really great question, Joe, because I think the tendency, and maybe it's because we're striver, achiever, consumer, doer Americans, I think there's a tendency to try to hang on to the third quarter in some people. And that oftentimes you hamstring yourself by continuing to try to hang on to the way things were and extend the third quarter into the fourth quarter. And I guess the way I would describe that is second and third quarter dreams really are about acquiring, accomplishing, accumulating. And fourth quarter dreams really begin to morph more into becoming, preparing, leaving a legacy, and relationships. And so there's a shift, not only in priorities, but about what your dreams are. And I think some folks resist that in different kinds of way. Either they worship youth, or they've had success and they have a hard time morphing into a different way of defining what success is, or they think more is always better. And so that trying to hang on to the third or extend or expand the third instead of really embracing the uniqueness of the fourth quarter is the biggest unforced error that I see the most often.
And fourth quarter also brings a lot of losses to it, inevitably. What are some ways that you've found are helpful to deal with fears and perhaps regrets, as you mentioned?
Yeah, I guess I would probably take that in two ways. One, fears and then regrets. They're related, but with regrets, what I really try to coach people to think about is a number of aspects. One is to begin thinking now about what your regrets would be if you got the news today that you were going to die 5 years from today. What's left undone? What have you yet to do? What have you yet to say? Those kinds of things, to begin building a plan to avoid those regrets. But also, you know, we all have regrets from along the way. How do you redeem those regrets and turn them into dreams? As we talked with hospice nurses and as we worked with people who were preparing to die and listen to some of their regrets, one of the greatest regrets people express is, I really wish I had expressed my feelings more. And so if that's a regret that you anticipate that you might have or that you have up to this point, say, okay, how can I turn that into a fourth quarter dream instead of letting that regret kind of hang on me like a wet sweater? And one way to do that is to think about this three simple statements. I love you, I forgive you, or please forgive me. And who do you need to say those things to? And begin to think about, who do you need to thank? Who do you need to express love to? Who do you need to forgive? And who do you actually need to forgive you? Who do you need to say I'm sorry to? And begin actually acting on that. And you'll not only begin to avoid regrets, but you'll also begin to experience a freedom from the past and a lightness and a liberty in the fourth quarter. My wife and I visited last week with a friend of ours who's 82. Who's getting ready to die probably in the next couple of days here. And he's getting very weak, and he and his wife have moved into one of their relatives, just the master bedroom, so they can have care and also be surrounded by family. And so we called to visit, and they said, you know, he's only accepting a couple of visitors. He's very weak, and you're on the list. And so we went to see him, and he realized, you know, I don't want to use these last days or even last hours wearing myself out on the relationships that don't matter as much to me. I've only got a limited amount of attention and energy, and I want to spend time with the relationships that matter the most. And so we got to say, I love you. And we got to say, thank you. And we got to say, I look forward to seeing you on the other side. And to bring sort of a sense of completion and wholeness to that relationship, and really to optimize that time so that he doesn't leave with regrets and that we don't have regrets afterward. I mean, it was a very powerful afternoon.
And fear and regrets can be narrowing. They can narrow our focus in some ways. And curious your thoughts on how can people stay open to the possibilities that lie ahead in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, as you think about what we talked about earlier, in terms of those five keys to a thriving or successful fourth quarter, to remain open to life, is a really powerful one, because your fourth quarter really can be more of a birthing than a dying. And I think in our culture of youth, and our culture that kind of wants to pretend that aging people don't exist and y'all go off to your own little corner of the universe and let's don't see you or hear from you, to actually kind of resist that and to understand that God is up to something in your fourth quarter. He hasn't abandoned you, and to remain open to what those possibilities are. And so a lot of the research has shown, in fact, I think you have one of these books on your website, The Good Life. Yeah, I think it's actually one of the top ones there in your recommendations at Retirement Wisdom. The real determinant of happiness in the fourth quarter is positive relationships. And then not only the positive relationships that you bring into the fourth quarter, but the new ones that you discover in the fourth quarter. That's one of the things that's really interesting to us about reading the research is the temptation is oftentimes to begin to close down and to narrow, like you said, to narrow your life to, I'm going to only do the same things. I'm going to only eat the same food. I'm going to only go to the same places, that kind of thing. And to actually push back against that tendency and to really plan your life to try some new things, to try some new trips, to visit some new places, to try some new adventures, to make some new friends, particularly making friends that are younger than you are, not so that you actually feel younger, but it injects a new life and a new vibrancy into your fourth quarter. And so I don't know where that human tendency comes from to begin to kind of close down some in the fourth quarter, but it's really, really powerful to push back against that. Not that you abandon anything in particular, but that you just insist on occasionally trying some new things and maybe learning to play guitar or maybe trying a food restaurant that you've never tried before. And you're like, I'm not sure I like Indian food. I'm going to try that. And maybe making some new friends will actually greatly change the tenor and the temperature of your fourth quarter.
Such a great idea. I had once read a book, and it's on the list too, and it's actually the one that I recommend most often. It's written by Kent Blanchard, who wrote The 1 Minute Manager, and Morton Schaefer. Yep. It's called Refire, Not Retire. He talks about the Serendipity Club, and there's only one rule. You have to say yes. And once a month on a Friday, you get a call to eat at a new restaurant, different cuisine, and you couldn't say no. And it was a great idea.
Yeah, you're making me think about my wife's childhood outside of Atlanta. She lived in a little area that has now been paved over and was part of the Atlanta airport. But at the time, it was a little subdivision, and there was a stream that kind of ran through the subdivision. And she and her brothers would go out and play in that stream and build dams and, you know, all that kind of stuff that kids do. And there was the stream ran through a guy's yard, an older man who was about 70, 75. Let's call him Mr. Robinson. And Mr. Robinson would oftentimes come out and he'd say, hey, let me give you, I got a special shovel that'll help you dig Georgia clay to build that dam. And I got some special branches over here that'll make a really great dam. And he'd get out there and he'd encourage him and he'd play with him and that kind of stuff. Three doors down, there was another guy, let's call him Mr. Johnson, who was also about that same age, 75, 80, something like that. And the stream didn't even run through his yard. And he had a big chain link fence around his yard, and he had a German Shepherd that barked a lot. And at night, when there was nobody out there, Mr. Johnson would go out and tear down the dam that the kids and Mr. Robinson had built. And so I use that image for people to go, you really kind of have a choice as that, are you going to remain open? Are you going to try new things? Are you going to play with people who are younger than you? Are you going to be open to the world, or are you going to retreat behind a fence and a paranoia and a German Shepherd and being threatened by these kids that are not even playing in your yard, by the way, but I don't want them having any joy. I'm going to suck the joy out of their life too. So I'd prefer to be the Mr. Robinson who gets out there, helps the kids and enjoys it along the way.
Great way to think about it. It always comes down to a choice. What choices are we making?
It is. It really is. It really is. Are you going to accept that closing in, or are you going to push back and step out?
So one of my favorite chapters in that book, I've read many of the books that you and Matthew have written together and separately. It's about talents. And people bring a lot of experience, a lot of wisdom, and a lot of talents into the fourth quarter. How can talents be used differently, perhaps, at this stage of life?
That's actually a more provocative question, and I think a lot of people ask, because, you know, a lot of times we think, I'm just going to use these talents that I used when I was working for IBM or when I was a nurse or what have you, and I'm just going to use these in my fourth quarter. And oftentimes people get frustrated by that because they're oftentimes not wanted in the same way. And so what I try to encourage and coach folks to do is to think about a couple of things. One is just start using your gifts on your own, even in the smallest of ways, and the opportunities will actually come to you. But if you sit and wait for people to call and ask you to come bring your wisdom or to come bring your talents, to bring your gifts, it oftentimes is going to be a very frustrating experience, because once you're out of sight at the hospital as a nurse, at the office as an IBM or whatever, you also become out of mind. And so oftentimes the resentment grows that, hey, I've got all these talents and nobody's taking advantage of them. Well, start using them and you'll be amazed at how quickly they'll start being appreciated by other kinds of folks. And the other two things around talents in the fourth quarter, Joe. One is oftentimes the greatest talent that we have is wisdom. And maybe we didn't have a lot of wisdom when we were 30 or when we were 40 or when we were 50. But if you've been paying attention to your life and you've been reflecting on your life and not only your successes, but your failures, when you're in your 60s and your 70s, you should have some wisdom that is really fruitful, whether for family members or for students or for people in your church or for junior achievement, those kinds of opportunities to where you can just share, hey, I made this mistake. Let me tell you what I learned from it. And then I guess the third thing is to be open to using your talents and your gifts in new ways rather than kind of pigeonholing yourself and saying, this is the talent I have and how I want to use it. Be open to the fact that it may emerge in a way that you don't expect and actually become more meaningful and life-giving than you ever expected. But then in the fourth quarter, oftentimes the opportunities are a little more unconventional than they are in the second and third quarter.
I want to set up my next question by telling a quick story.
Sure.
As a teenager in basketball camp, I once found myself taking shots at 6 o'clock in the morning before breakfast. And all of a sudden, I found myself on the court with Sam Jones, the Boston Celtics great Hall of Famer, who was famous for his bank shot. I said, I can't pass up this opportunity. I got to ask him, how'd you learn the bank shot? So he didn't say a word. He just demonstrated and hit about 50 in a row. He kept stepping back 5 feet and hitting in a row. So I said, I'm glad I asked him. That was a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I feel like I've got the same thing here. With you on here, I have to ask the next question. And that's about spirituality. And it's something we don't cover much on the podcast, but should. And one topic that many of my clients, and it's across different religious beliefs, raise, that they're interested in their spiritual growth in retirement. And they often don't know where to start. And they're kind of awkward about the topic sometimes. And listeners heard your background in the intro to this conversation. But I'm curious, what advice would you offer people listening on spiritual growth in the fourth quarter?
Well, you're right. I mean, that's kind of the space that I live in the most. And you noticed when you asked me in the beginning on what makes a successful fourth quarter that the number one is to say yes to God, because in all those interviews and all those people that we accompanied, there was a clear difference between people that had a faith foundation or a robust faith life and people who didn't. There was a sense of purpose and there was a sense of peace that folks who didn't have that faith life lacked. And oftentimes they were flailing around because they really were trying to figure out, what is my life about? What does really matter? And so I guess the first thing I would say is to dig the well before you get thirsty. Is that wherever you are now, now is the time to start working on your spiritual life. Don't say, I'm going to work on that 10 years from now or I'll get around to it. Because when you get to your fourth quarter, you do want to have as much of that in place as you can. And then the second thing would be to, just as we talked about with the successful fourth quarter, is to be intentional. It doesn't happen by accident. Here's five or six ways that you can be intentional. Don't try all five or six. Just pick one. Go on a spiritual retreat. Go on a pilgrimage. Become a part of a small group at your church or your religious place. Start reading scripture daily. Develop a daily habit of prayer. Keep a spiritual journal. Pick one of those and just start and then see where it goes. But intentionality, like it is in so many other aspects of life, for some reason, a lot of us are very reluctant to apply intentionality to our spiritual lives. And I don't know. I'm not sure why that is, but it's not helpful because as you know, Joe, in all the stuff that you do with Design Your Life and Tiny Habits, intentionality matters in every aspect of your life, whether it's your physical health, your mental health, your spiritual life. And so just to put together a simple one step, this is the next step I'm going to take, and then see what God begins to do in your life as you do that, whether you go on that pilgrimage or you develop a daily habit of prayer or just sitting in silence and being in the presence of God. Take one step, be intentional, and it will be a powerful, powerful force in your fourth quarter. It really will.
And for those who don't know, you have been on your own spiritual journey. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that. And then I've got one more question if you have time.
Sure. that's trying to think how to answer that quickly. I guess when I went to college back in the 80s, way back when, I think Abe Lincoln was still president then. Yeah, I majored in finance, went into management consulting, and just sort of had a sense of incompleteness, if you will. I liked what I was doing and was good at it, but just didn't feel like this is what I was made for. And really got a sense of calling from God at that point to go into full-time ordained ministry. So I left and I served 20 years as a Methodist pastor in Georgia. And in 2008, I stepped down from that role and I became Catholic. And for the next 12 or 13 years, I partnered with a guy named Matthew Kelly at a group that we call Dynamic Catholic to try to help Catholics with their spiritual lives and help Catholic parishes. So I've done a lot of writing, a lot of speaking, a lot of teaching. And so I retired from that at the end of last year. And now I've gone from Methodist pastor to layperson in Catholic Church, and from preaching three times every week to writing and traveling and speaking and that kind of stuff. But it's been a wonderful journey, Joe. It really, really has. The spiritual dimension to me is what makes everything else work in life. And I know some people don't encounter it that way, but for me, it really is the most life-giving aspect of my existence. So I'm grateful to be able to do what I do.
Thanks for that background. I would be remiss if I didn't ask, because you're in your own fourth quarter, so it's not theory, it's theory and practice. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
Yeah, I really kind of used the last year to try to discern how I wanted to use my fourth quarter. I turned 60 and I have 7 grandkids, as you know, and 3 of them are in Georgia, a couple hours from my wife and me, and four of them in Georgia, and 3 of them are out in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, where their dad's in the Navy. And we also help care for my mother-in-law. And so my wife and I really just kind of began to sense that our priorities needed to shift to helping both of our daughters, because our grandkids have some unique needs in a couple of situations. And our daughters really need time more than anything else. And my mother-in-law also benefits from us being able to be available to her. So I kind of set, over the course of the year, I set a target. One of my friends said, "Alan, I think you need to decide." This was a really game-changing question for me. He said, "Alan, I think you need to decide how many days you actually want to work." And I thought, well, that's a good way of looking at it. So I sat down for a while and I thought, okay, I want to work 100 days. I want to spend 50 days spread out over the year with each of the 2 grandkids home. So 50 plus 50, so that's 100 plus 200, that's 200. I want to spend 50 days in a little town in North Carolina where I grew up, just retreat, pray, hike, write, that kind of stuff. And then the other 110 days, 115 days here in Georgia, just exploring life. So I kind of organized it around that. So a lot of family and caregiving, some exploring some aspects of my life that I didn't have time to do when I was working and traveling all the time. And then 100 days coaching people on the fourth quarter. Got a YouTube channel, Dr. Alan Hunt, there on YouTube with 300 free videos thinking about fourth quarter stuff. And coaching folks, doing a little bit of writing and a little bit of speaking. So far, so good, Joe. So far, so good. We're in the early part of the fourth quarter, but so far, so good.
And it sounds like if we do the fourth quarter right, there'll be overtime.
That's the hope. That's the hope, is that you get the overtime period. My wife's grandmother died at 98. My uncle's 92. I said, you guys are using that bonus overtime period well. That's what I'm hoping. Put in a few more bank shots like Sam.
Yeah, there you go. You're telling us there's a chance.
Yeah, that's right.
Alan, thank you so much. People will find a link to your website as well as the YouTube channel. Great videos on there, and really appreciate taking the time to talk with us today.
Joe, it's a blessing, and I give thanks for what you do. It's a really great comprehensive approach that you have at Retirement Wisdom. So thanks for having me on, man.
Time for my takeaway segment. Some ideas you can put into action following today's conversation with Dr. Alan Hunt. Number 1, what will matter most in your fourth quarter? This is a question that's worth spending some time on. What are those things that were important to you in the third quarter that may be less important going forward? And how about the opposite? What are those things that will be critical in this fourth quarter? And as you're thinking about it, what's an important thing that will be important but needs more attention on your part? Number 2, what's possible in your fourth quarter? I don't know about you, but the fourth quarter analogy really works for me. It resonates. It makes me capture that feeling of focus that you get in the fourth quarter of a game. And I hope you're feeling that same sense of urgency that Alan's construct provides. But just like in a sports game, there's a mistake that can be made to play not to lose rather than play to win. And you want to be creative and you want to be expansive in your thinking. So my question to you is, what are the possibilities that you're interested in exploring in this part of life? you can play something safe, but take some chances in some other areas. So what's possible? Number three, what talents are you bringing to your fourth quarter? This is a particularly interesting thing to think about in the ways that Alan mentioned. First, what are you bringing that could be redeployed, redirected in helping others? But also, what new talents can you cultivate, or talents that are emerging that you want to bring to the table? How will you use your talents and gifts in the years ahead? Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. My mission is to help you retire smarter by focusing not only on the financial foundation you need to retire, but on the question of what are you going to be retiring to and designing the life that you want to make happen. You can browse all episodes across 7 seasons at our website, retirementwisdom.com. And while you're there, check out our best books on retirement. It's a resource library to help you do your homework for the years ahead. Thanks for listening.